Was by Joe Yon. The editor is Heba Ayoub. Ancient rainforests are at the heart of plants from roots to riches now on Radio 4, as Professor Cathy Willis, the Director of Science at the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, continues her major new history of our changing relationship with plants.
In 2007, an extraordinary new find came to light in the plant kingdom. A French plantation manager, Xavier Metz, was walking with family in remote Madagascar when he came across what appeared to be a completely unknown species of palm tree. Samples were sent here to Kew Gardens. Metz was right. It turned out to be entirely possible for an 18-metre monster with a 5-metre leaf span and flowers like gigantic yellow candelabras to flourish in the wild without science knowing about it. Kew's head of palms at the time, John Dransfield, takes up the story.
Everything went mad. People were astonished. And Xavier also then looked in Google Earth, and the resolution for Google Earth for that bit of Madagascar is unusually good.
So you could see the palm?
And you can see the palm. So the next thing that happened was that our close colleague, my ex-PhD student, Mitsuru Rakutuareniv, he went and made the collections. And I can remember immense excitement that he came to stay for Easter and he brought the sample with him. And we opened it up in the garden and I looked at this thing and I said immediately, it's a member of the Tuniophenaceae, which means that its closest relatives are a palm called Nanorops that grows in Afghanistan, another genus called Caryodoxa, which occurs in Thailand, on the island of Phuket, and another palm of two species, Tuniophenix, in Hainan and Vietnam.
So how on earth do you have a palm in Madagascar that has those links across in an evolutionary sense? It's
I wish I could explain it. Morphologically, there was absolutely no doubt at all in my mind that these had to be closely related. Yeah. The four different genera are widely, almost wildly different from each other in general form, but the flower structure and fruit structure is all pretty congruent.
And what about the molecular phylogeny?
Molecular data completely supported its position there.
The new palm was named after one of Metz's daughters, Tahina, which is also a Magalese word meaning to be blessed, and spectabilis, a Latin word which can mean not just remarkable, but also gaudy, showy and conspicuous, all entirely appropriate epithets for this colourful giant. Tahina spectabilis is just one of a long line of palms identified by Kew since the 1980s. Palms provide many basic necessities. They're collectively one of the most economically important plant families after grasses and legumes. Cataloguing the different types of palms as new species make themselves known to science to appreciate their potential uses is therefore important. When the so-called palm Bible Genera Pomarum was in press in 2007, Tahina spectabilis had only just been discovered. It was hurriedly added to the book at the last minute, and the range of known species continues to grow. Bill Baker is head of palm research at Kew.
We're focusing on New Guinea at the moment because that is such an inaccessible place. We've worked for years to build up good relationships in New Guinea, which mean that we can now go and do great collaborative field work there. And the things that we find there every field trip, genuine novelties at the species and at the generic level. So, for example, I've just published 15 new species of rattan, single genus Calamus, from New Guinea. I've got another 10 to write up when I find the time. There's so much out there still appearing, but that island is under intensifying threat. So one is also saddened by the fact that pretty much everything you discover and describe as new is also endangered.
But incredibly excited to be finding all these new species all the time.
When I first started doing this, I found I couldn't sleep at night after realising something was new. It's just such a thrill.
And it's in here, in Kew's Palm House, that we have a living library, a museum of life documenting new classifications which add to our understanding of the history of the family and their distribution around the world. As you'll see on our website, it's also a beautiful building. Scott, we're standing in front of what looks to me to be the largest palm in here.
This is the biggest that we've got, Atalaya butyracea, which is commonly called babassu. It's actually an Amazonian palm. And at the moment, we've got about 10 metres of stem height, but those leaves are so huge that it's measuring about 20 metres nearly in total height, with the leaves being so big.
I mean, it's incredible. It looks like it's about to grow through the roof. What are you going to do?
Well, sadly, with palms, they've only got one growing point, which is right at the top of the stem. And if that growing point is removed, the palm dies. So sadly, once they reach the top of the space that we've got for them, we have to remove them. Thankfully, with this one, it's produced us countless seeds over the years. You can see on the plant the old inflorescences that are on there. And we've got its progeny to replace it later on in the future.
So how much longer is this palm going to be around for?
I'd give it another 18 months maximum.
Oh, sad.
I also try and time in the removal of these palms for the winter, because the guys who work on the trees are normally used to working outside and they can't take these warm conditions over the summer.
And I mean, just looking around, there's a massive diversity of palms. How many species have we got in here?
We've got about 249 species of palm. That's about 10% of the whole family. And I'd love to have more, but I am limited by space. We've only got just under 1,000 square metres of planting space here in the palm house.
This hothouse, crammed full of palms, is a great example of Kew's dual role as a world-class visitor attraction and a centre of research. As you may have heard in a previous episode, advances in the use of genetic tools for classifying flowering plants lie at the heart of huge strides in our understanding of the evolutionary relationships between plants. And the palm family is no exception. Research at Kew means that we can now give each new find its rightful place in the burgeoning tree of life based on their molecular characteristics apparent in their DNA. This research has suggested that there are 5 evolutionary lineages and has also produced some surprises. Bill Baker.
We confirmed some aspects of old-fashioned taxonomy, which is always reassuring, but there were some real shockers. So in front of us we have a Caryota, which has a very weird, doubly pinnate leaf with funny fishtail leaflets, standing above Caryodoxa, which is a really fantastic fan palm from Thailand. And I brought this just to illustrate the fact that when we did all this DNA work on palms, here you have a great example of the fan palms. This Caryodoxa here has epically beautiful, perfect, rounded fan-shaped leaf, and yet above it this slightly scruffy fishtail palm. It's hard to believe that fishtail palm is pretty closely related to this fan palm here. And some of those findings were really unexpected and turned our concepts of palm classification on their head.
So if you classified them according to leaf shape, then you put them into one group, but then when you looked at their molecular characteristics, they're not so close, is that correct?
Exactly. I mean, the morphology of palms is positively misleading and doesn't necessarily reflect, if you look at the wrong character, it doesn't necessarily reflect the history underpinning that group.
In looking at the history of palms, DNA sequences are themselves an amazing evolutionary record. They show mutations that have accumulated in genomes over millions of years. In a sense, a molecular fossil record. One of the principal advantages of genetic analysis is the length of the timescales involved. Looking at living specimens or examples from field collections gives you only a very recent history, a snapshot in time. Even fossils only get you so far, and there is also bias in the record depending on the preservation conditions at the time of burial and the potential of the plant to become fossilised. Some plants are much more suitable for fossilisation than others. Genetic analysis, therefore, provides an additional window into evolution over much longer timescales and, crucially, begins to show when diversification of palms occurred.
We can do clever things with DNA trees nowadays, a bit of smoke and mirrors, and using complex analysis and being informed by the fossil record, we can try and estimate a date for the diversification of the palms. And we think the current extant, the living lineages of palms that we see today, started to diversify about 100 million years ago. So that's about the middle of the Cretaceous, and because they have this very strong relationship with rainforests, 90-95% of all palms occur in rainforests. That's led us on to wonder, well, if we have a really good evolutionary tree for the palms, what can we get out of that in terms of insights into the evolution of rainforest itself? one of the things that first hit us is that if palms have always been conserved to occur in the rainforest, they diversified 100 million years ago, and yet the really robust fossil evidence for angiosperm-dominated rainforests such as we know today doesn't really kick in till after the end of the Cretaceous, 55, 65 million years ago. And yet our evidence seems to suggest that palms were diversifying in a rainforest-like environment 100 million years ago.
This 40 million year difference in what the molecular record suggests as the earliest diversification of palms and what the fossil record indicates is just one of a number of conundrums that have been thrown up by analysing the DNA fingerprint. Another key question that botanists have long wondered is how rainforests became so rich in species. They are, after all, the most plant species-rich areas on the planet. Charles Darwin's contemporary Alfred Russel Wallace suggested in his Tropical Nature and Other Essays of 1878, the great mass of equatorial forests must have benefited from consistent climatic conditions over time, whereas Earth's temperate areas had experienced periodic checks and extinctions.
In one, evolution has had a fair chance. In the other, it has had countless difficulties thrown in its way. The equatorial regions are then, as regards their past and present life history, a more ancient world than that represented by the temperate zones, a world in which the laws that have governed the progressive development of life have operated with comparatively little check for countless ages and have resulted in these infinitely varied and beautiful forms.
This is now known as the museum model of evolution, where it's argued that constant climatic conditions and stability over time allows genetic variations to accumulate, leading to greater species richness in these regions. So what does the genetic evidence suggest?
The exciting thing about having a good evolutionary tree is not only can you get absolute dates on events, but you can also look at trajectories. And what we found in the palms is that the diversity of palm lineages accumulated in a very steady rate over time, at least up until the Miocene, about 20 million years ago. And that's exciting because most of the molecular evidence is pointing us to sort of glitzy, recent, rapid radiations. And also we know that rainforests are dynamic places and there's a lot of disturbance and turnover over time. And yet our evidence matches the so-called museum model. Diversity can evolve and build over time. So to find out that palms conform to that, the quintessential tropical family conform to that model, at least at this deep level, was extremely exciting. But we haven't yet looked at the tips of the tree of life. We haven't got into the species level details. So I suspect once we start looking, as we are at the moment, for example, at the radiation of palms in Madagascar, we'll start to see some of those explosive, rapid periods of diversification happening in more recent timeframes.
Food, timber, medicines, and writing materials have all been derived from palms. And the more we know about them, the more useful they become. And the more we understand the need to protect and nurture them for their benefit and ours. So next, we turn to the services plants offer, in effect the natural capital of plants. Which plant biodiversity is most useful to humankind, both now and in the future? And which bits should we conserve? And where?
That was Professor Kathy Willis with Plants from Roots to Riches. The reader was Clive Hayward. The series is produced by Adrian Washbourne. And you can discover more about palms by searching for Plants from Roots to Riches online, where you can also download each episode as a podcast. After the news, Elizabeth has a crisis of confidence, while Ed has high hopes. The Archers in a couple of minutes. Tomorrow night, we join Matthew Taylor wearing his mediator's hat.
Have you noticed that when it comes to heated debate, the protagonists spend more time attacking and caricaturing each other than they do clarifying exactly what they stand for themselves? Well, not on Agree to Differ. In the studio, we'll have two people with strongly held opposing positions. My role as mediator is to discover what really divides them, and just as important, if there's anything they can agree on. Join me, Matthew Taylor, for Agree to Differ, tomorrow evening at 8 on BBC Radio 4.